Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's the Dancing Housewife Show. I'm your host, the Dancing Housewife. My guest today is Katie Harrison, also known as the girl with the tree tattoo, because, oddly enough, she has the Tree of Life tattoo on her back, her entire back. It's beautiful. Katie is a technical editor by day and, of course, an amateur ballroom dancer by night. She created the ballroom dance blog called The Girl with the Tree Tattoo, and she's the author of the Dance Diaries book series. Katie, welcome to the Dancing Housewife Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Katie and I met online. Actually, Katie invited me to be part of a group started by another blogger called The Ballroom Village, and that's where I've met a lot of ballroom dance bloggers. And but Katie, your blog was, I guess, the first one that I started following, and since then you have written two books. I'd love to talk. I read both of them, and they're really good practical books for people who are interested in starting ballroom dancing, or who are already ballroom dancing and trying to figure out how to manage it. The first one that you wrote is called Learning Ballroom Dance, and it's kind of a what to expect when you first start to dance. What inspired you to write that book? You'd been dancing for a while, I guess, when you wrote that book.
Yes, I guess I've been dancing I wrote it just at the beginning of 2016, so it's been a little over 3 years that I've been dancing, but just the whole experience of ballroom dance really motivated me to grow as a writer also, and I think almost every writer, one of their dreams is always to be published.
Right.
And after experiencing success in ballroom, that kind of gave me the courage to push myself beyond blog and, actually produce something bigger, like a book. And so I've just gone through, I think everybody goes through this really kind of awkward phase when you first get into ballroom, because there's all these little things that you just sort of figure out on your own.
Nice.
Or by mistake, or, you go through something like really confusing, and then afterwards you understand, oh, this is how it should have gone, but nobody told me. So I wanted to take all of those kind of more like awkward things or challenging things or even painful things that I went through when I was first getting started, put that all together and kind of give it,
put
it out in the world like a freshman 101. Like,
right. Well, it's true. Even if you've had a history of being a competitive athlete in another sport, the competitive dance floor is so different from anything else. It's and just the little things that, I think that pros oftentimes take for granted, like, what do you mean? Where do I stand for on deck? Or what does that mean? Or how do I find out if I made it out of the preliminary rounds and if I got a call back? And, just even basic etiquette, like how to walk on and off the floor. Those are things that I think sometimes pros, not because they're not preparing you, they're so focused on preparing you for executing your choreography that they forget about all those little things, like, oh, guess what, you can't just walk up to the lady doing hair and expect to have an appointment 5 minutes before those kinds of things. So it was a really good book and a quick read, and I would encourage anybody who's thinking about dancing, competing, to read it, because you touch on some really great points. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, and you handled it and with a lot of grace, is the whole focus of on the student-teacher relationship. And I love the friend versus friendly, the way you described it as friend versus friendly, and there was one part where you said, you know, how often do you do things with your teacher that you're not paying him to do or paying her to do or something like that? And I thought that was brilliant, because there is some confusion. And so I'm curious, have you seen that happen? Did you experience it? How did you handle that so well? How did you describe that situation so well? I'm just curious.
Well, it was born out of personal experience. The teacher I dance and compete with now is not my first teacher. My first teacher, I went through a lot of the, you know, awkwardness and confusion that I described in those chapters about the relationship with him, because, you know, I had no idea how, you know, quote unquote, how things are in the ballroom world. So when I went into the studio and I met this guy and he's going to teach me dancing, and, you know, but through the lessons, you talk about each other's lives and you find out, you know, you have other things in common, and you spend a lot of time laughing, you know, mostly at the mistakes I was making, but, you form a bond, you form a relationship. And so I thought, this is so cool. I'm learning to dance and I'm making a new friend.
Right.
And then at one point, you know, there was some kind of falling out. Something happened where his attitude switched, and I didn't understand what had happened, and I can't really explain it fully now because I never got a chance to talk to him, you know, and get his side of the story. But, you know, suddenly he wasn't being so friendly, and, you know, and he would cancel lessons, and I would try to talk, you know, like, what's wrong? You know, what's going on? And finally, at one point, he said, you know, he told me, you know, I think you should take lessons with another teacher. And I was devastated. I was floored. I felt rejected and abandoned. And like, you know, like, it was like getting dumped. It was,
yeah.
It was just so painful. But as I talked to you, you know, it turned out to be, you know, the best, like, oddly enough, it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to me, because I switched to my current teacher and we have an amazing connection, you know, on and off the floor, but, you know, it's also much more professional.
Right.
And mature. And as I was talking, you know, as I share my story of my first teacher with other students, almost everybody had a similar story. And, you know, it was like, okay, wait, this is so common. Like, is this a hazing that all the beginner students are required to go through? Like, we have to, you know, be pulled into this, you know, because you're pulled into this fantasy world. And, you know, nowhere else in life do you get such attention and doting on, you know?
Right.
I mean, maybe with a spouse, you get that, you know, real, you know, just doting upon.
Right.
But, you know, and so, you know, if you don't realize, like, oh, it's, like, partly, you know, to be frank, it's part of the business, because
right.
they want you to have, enjoy
a
yourself
great
to come back, you
right.
know, come back and take more lessons, you know. But then another part of it is ballroom can be so difficult and really challenge your self-confidence
right.
and, you know, just bring up all these demons of, you know, of self-doubt and fear, that they need to give you that, you know, that real extra close attention to keep you encouraged, you
right.
know, and to make you help you build up confidence when you hit a plateau and you just can't figure out a dance move, or, you know, you mess something up in a showcase and you're upset about it. But but that's what kind of inspired me to really delve into the dynamics of that relationship, and then the friend versus friendly. And like, people, you know, if people are getting into ballroom, I want them to be aware of this ahead of time, because people have quit. You know, I know people personally who have quit ballroom dancing because they went through a painful experience, like, you know, with their first teacher, and they never go back because it just ruins their, you know, it just ruins their whole piece for ballroom. And I didn't want that to happen to other people. So, like, okay, we need to get this out so everybody knows ahead of time, they're prepared, and then you can, you know, have a, I think,
a plan,
you know, a fuller and more complete experience, because you'll be prepared and you'll understand what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I thought you handled it. I really enjoyed that part of the book, and it was even a little funny, you know, parts. So let's talk about the second book, Ballroom Budgeting, How to Pay for It. Very critical. A lot of people get started in ballroom and you get sucked in, and then before you know it, you've spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, or you have to quit because you cannot support the habit. And I thought that this book, I mean, I really think that there's a need for a book like this. It was great. I loved your spreadsheets and your, I mean, just, it's sort of basic fundamental how to save money and how to budget, but you know, some of the tips and tricks and, you know, learning how to do your own makeup, learning how to do your own hair, renting a dress versus buying a dress, you know, all really great ideas. And again, I know from reading the book that this you were inspired to write this book from personal experience, and you're here to live and tell, you know, young people like yourself that, you know, it's manageable, you can do it. So tell me how you came up with your plans and your budget plans, and, you know, what, I mean, I guess necessity is the mother of invention, so you just didn't want to give up ballroom dancing.
That pretty much says it right there. Yeah, the second book, Ballroom Budgeting, was completely all personal experience. Again, it was just after I got the second book out and I was getting good feedback, and just personally, I felt really accomplished by, you know, like, yes, like, I got a book out, I felt good about this, I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to do more. And so the budgeting was the natural topic to follow up on, because that's the biggest, my biggest challenge besides the actual dancing. The biggest challenge is learning how to pay for it. And, you know, like I said, I would talk to people about, and would meet people that had quit ballroom because of bad experience with their teacher. Probably 10 times more people quit ballroom because it just gets way too expensive.
Exactly.
And I've had, I mean, it's just been such an incredible experience, and it's hard to relate how life-changing ballroom dancing can be when, to someone who hasn't tried it yet. But I just, again, I didn't want people, if there are people out there who just needed a little help on, like you said, like, it is just basic budgeting. If they just needed some help on basic budgeting, then I wanted to put that out there. So if that's all they needed to keep dancing, I wanted them to have that tool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, may as well throw in all the different tips, tricks, strategies that I've come up with to be able to go to the competitions and, you know, pay for the lessons that I do pay for. Because it definitely, yeah, it gets expensive very quickly.
Yeah, it really does. And, I mean, whether you can afford to do it or not, I mean, who wants to spend that much money when you can do it more, you know, cost effectively? I mean, it's a really practical book.
Sure.
And for the folks listening, I will have, go to the Dancing Housewife blog, and the post associated with this episode will have links to Katie's book site. So they're available on Amazon, but you can also get them through her website. So you should go check them out. Now, I love your blog, of course, because I'm a blog nut, and I read blogs all the time. And I would be remiss if I did not talk about the tattoo. And so, so for the folks listening on iTunes or Podomatic, please go to thedancinghousewife.com. You'll get the links to Katie's books, but you'll also see a photograph of this incredible tattoo. And first of all, how long did that take to complete?
It was, let's see, I had 7 sessions with a tattoo artist, and each one was about 3 hours long. Oh. I think the first one went 4 some hours because we had to do the entire outline.
Okay.
But yeah, so 7 sessions, and probably total it was 20 some hours to complete.
Now, you know, for the folks who are ballroom dancers, who know that you kind of depart from tradition a little bit by dancing with that, you know, open back dress and proudly displaying that tattoo. That's not, you know, that's not typical in the ballroom. So I commend you for you know, showing it in all its glory. I mean, it really is amazing. I have to ask you why. What inspired you to do that? Tell me why the Tree of Life, and how did it just come to be?
Well, actually, the original idea came from a necklace that I had when I was in high school. So the necklace had a Tree of Life symbol on one side of it, and I honestly can't remember where I got the necklace from, but I remember thinking I wanted that design tattooed on me. I wasn't sure where or how big, but like that I want permanently inked on my body.
Wow.
And the idea kind of evolved. You know, at first it was just going to be, oh, like a little tattoo on my wrist or like the back of my neck or shoulder or something, and it would keep evolving, but it never quite felt right. And, you know, finally after college, it got, you know, kind of put on a back shelf in my mind. And then actually, the first teacher that I started taking ballroom dance lessons with, he had tattoos also. And ballroom dancing in general just really opened up my passionate side. You know, my passion for creative writing was reignited. My passion for dancing just, you know, blew up. And so this, you know, this idea, the tree tattoo came, you know, kind of forced its way into the front of my mind also. And, you know, having a teacher who also had tattoos, and so to talk to him about my ideas, that kind of, you know, got the ball rolling in my head. And so finally it ended up being, I'm like, okay, I want the whole tree, you know, the tree to cover my entire back. And there's a rock at the base with the yin yang symbol, kind of, you know, looks like it's you know, engraved on the rock, because that was just be symbolic for balance is
right.
Is very important to me. And then I have this silhouette of Gene Kelly from Singing in the Rain. He's one of my favorite dancers, and Singing in the Rain is one of my favorite musicals of all time, movies in general of all time.
Me too.
So he went on there as a symbol of my love of dance. And then I just ended up leaving the branches bare because I had this idea of the tree could grow with me as I, you know, continue through life and experience different things. If there's something that I really want to memorialize, then I'll add to the tree.
Oh, wow.
So it became really important part. I mean, obviously it became an important part of me because I built this whole, the girl through tree tattoo identity off of it. But when it came to competing, my teacher did sit me down before my first competition. And actually for the first one, the tattoo wasn't completed. So I did cover it up with makeup, but I told him, you know, I said, once it's completed, I want to display it, you know, and he sat me down and he's like, you know, I support you, whatever, whatever you want to do, you know, I will support you, but I want you to know that, you know, like you said, it's not traditional. And some of the judges might be a little more conservative, a little more traditional, and not like it. And if they don't like it, they could mark you down for it. You know, like, that's just the way it is. It's not necessarily fair, but it's like, whatever you want to do, I support you, but I want you to be aware that you're not disappointed if you feel like you dance better than you were placed. But for me, ballroom dancing, like, it felt like such a part of me, like, okay, this is who I am, like, I'm going to be a ballroom dancer. But the tattoo is such an important part of me also that I was like, you know what, if I'm going to go out there, I'm going to go out there as all of me. I can't hide one part of me for the sake of other people's perception of another part of me.
Right.
So it's kind of like all or nothing.
Well, yeah, and if you're like me, I don't necessarily define my success on the dance floor with my placements. I mean, I have had the experience of feeling like I have danced the absolute best I could on a given day at a competition and haven't placed well. And then I've also, you know, I've also done that and placed well, and I've also placed well and felt like I didn't dance well. So for me, it's more about being the best dancer and executing to the best of my ability every day and just getting better every day. So placements for me, I mean, absolutely, obviously I call it free dancing. I like to get into finals, you know, because I feel like, wow, it's so expensive. Right. You might want to get as much bang for your buck as you can, right? You just try to dance in as many rounds. But so I mean, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, I sort of feel the same way about the whole hair and makeup thing, because I'm not necessarily, I've learned how to do my own makeup, and I drank the Kool-Aid, and I embrace that, but I just never liked the way my hair looked, so I just basically cut it all off. I mean, like, I have really short hair now, and I just don't deal with it. And so I know that that's not necessarily, that isn't always welcome either, but anyway, it's what it is. So let's talk about your dancing. So you started dancing in around 2011, but you didn't start competing for a while, right? For until 2014?
Yeah.
Okay. Why'd you wait so long? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So the timeline goes like this. My ex-husband, when we were first getting married, we took ballroom lessons. We were doing a 1920s themed wedding, and so we were going to go learn some swing. So we took some lessons before the wedding, and then, you know, I was just all about it, so I convinced him to take some more lessons with me just after the wedding. But we just bought small packages of five, and so once those were used up, he said, you know, like, this was fun, but, you know, it's too expensive. I don't really feel like continuing it. And of course I couldn't let it go. I was
right,
like, no, come on, let's go do more. So, but he was like, I'm just not interested. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'm going to start saving, you know, my own money to, you know, do lessons on my own. And, you know, like, I think after that, a friend at work actually has started taking dance lessons, and she invited me to her studio to a practice party, and so excited, you know, this is where I belong. I'm gonna sign up for private lessons, and then I realized how much a good amount of them are, not just a set of five.
Right.
And they have, you know, the studios always have the introductory package or the first lesson free or something like that. But I said, no, I don't want to, you know, start drinking the Kool-Aid if I can't afford to keep drinking it. You know, you don't want to, like, get a little hit and then not be able to keep going. So I said, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to wait. You know, I still go to practice parties and I was going to wait until I had saved up enough money to, you know, buy a good chunk of lessons. And then in December 2012, my dad surprised me with a package of 10 lessons at that studio. And so I jumped on the bandwagon at that point. And so then it was about 6 or 7 months, and I did my first showcase, just like a, you know, a kind of dance recital type show that the studios do. Because I hadn't really been I hadn't been exposed to competition yet. I'd gone to a studio showcase and like, oh my gosh, I want to dance up on stage. I'm terrified, but I want to do it. So I did that first, and it wasn't really until I had switched to my current teacher that he started talking to me about the possibility of competition, because he's an active competitor on the professional level. He and his professional partner compete in American Smooth. So that's like encouragement from him convinced me to give this other, you know, this other side of ballroom a try. And that's where I really found my niche. I was like, okay, this is it. This is where I belong.
Yeah. It is very addictive. I mean, there's, you know, the whole experience, the whole competitive experience. I mean, the dress and the excitement and anticipation and, you know, the hair and the makeup. I mean, you know, just the whole pomp and circumstance of it. It's very, very addicting, I think. And so you said your teacher dances on the pro circuit with his partner in American Smooth. So is that why, was that just why you ended up dance? I understand that you dance smooth. You dance American Smooth. And
yes.
So is that how that happened, just because that's his forte, or is that something that you really had always planned to do?
I had always wanted to learn both American Rhythm and Smooth. And in the beginning, I didn't really completely understand all of, you know, that there's these four styles. You have the American Smooth and Rhythm, and then you have the International Ballroom or Standard and the International Latin.
Right.
So I wanted to do Rhythm and Smooth. And my first teacher had started me with Rhythm. But then I had taken some group classes with my current teacher before I switched over to him. I took some group classes from him, and he would be teaching the smooth dances, you know, waltz or foxtrot. And I loved doing the smooth dances with him. So when I did switch to him as my private instructor, I told him I want to do both styles, but, you know, I said, let's start with smooth, because I loved dancing smooth with him when I got a chance to in the group classes.
Yeah. Any plans to start competing in American Rhythm?
Yes. Actually, I was hoping to debut my rhythm at the beginning of October, but, you know, life always comes up with new challenges for me that require additional money, so I wasn't able to put the money together in time. But after my last competition was California Open this past February, or February 2016, and after that, I knew I was going to have to hold off on competing for a while, so we started working on rhythm to give me something new to work on. So I felt like I had a new project instead of just continuing to work on smooth and waiting for the money pile to grow.
Right.
So yes, I do want to compete in rhythm. I'd like to do nine dance, you know, where you do both smooth and rhythm.
That's my favorite.
And I'm hoping to get back into competing in spring of 2017. So
I'm just curious.
Maybe by the time that the podcast is published, then it'll.
Yeah.
I'll know exactly when.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make sure that I publish an update when I when the podcast goes gets released. Have you ever contemplated dancing straight amateur. It's a lot less expensive, and it's really fun.
Yes, I would love to find an amateur partner if anybody out there listening.
The girl with the tree tattoo is looking. She's really cute. Check out the photo.
Please contact me. yes, I am on the lookout. I've reached a point in my dancing where I feel comfortable enough in my dancing skills that I could work with an amateur partner and not worry about teacher being there to cover up my mistakes, kind of thing. It's at least in my area in Orange County, California, it's been hard for me to find someone. I do practice. I started practicing with another student. He also dances smooth, and he's at the silver level like I am, but he already had a competitive partner. So we'll get together and practice about once a week, but he already has a partner for competition, so that's not going to work. And I've met a couple other guys, but it already seems like the same story. They already have a competitive partner or they're transitioning to teaching.
Right.
And so it's
so then yeah, you find yourself pro-am anyway. So yeah.
Right. That sort of defeats the purpose.
You know, I feel like we need to start a like, you know, they have eHarmony and Match.com and, like, all these apps. You know, I feel like we need to start. I think we could make a lot of money if we could develop an app for an iPhone, which is, like, a find an amateur partner app. So, Katie, you're on that. Get on that.
There you go. I'll work on that. Okay. I know that I've just discovered some Facebook groups where people will advertise for partners. So I'm like, okay, I'll just like work on something. Maybe I'll post something on Facebook. But yes, I would definitely love to do some AM competition at some point in the future.
I'm just curious. Did you have any previous dance experience, or did you just take this plunge because you just have always wanted to try it? Or, you know, when you got the bug, when you first started, when you were prepping for your wedding?
Sure. Well, when I was very little, like 5, 6, 7 years old, my parents had me in a dance studio that did like ballet, jazz, and tap.
Okay.
So I did, you know, some dance recitals. I was a California raisin. I was a sailor on the good ship Lollipop, you know. but then we lived in California at the time, and then when I was about 8 years old, we moved cross country to Pennsylvania, and I was a very, very shy child, and I was just afraid. I was afraid to start at a new studio, so when my parents asked me, like, you know, do you want to keep dancing? I told them no, and it's kind of a heavy weight to put on an eight-year-old, but it's, like, my biggest regret in life is saying no, like, that I said no, and I gave up my dancing. Because after that, I didn't, you know, go to school dances, and I would, you know, just kind of mess around. Or, you know, in college, I would go out to clubs with friends and, you know, improv to hip-hop music or what have you. But I'd always long to get back into some more structured dancing. And yeah, then I found ballroom for when we were doing preparation for the wedding, and it's like, this is it. This is my chance to redeem my 8-year old self for letting dance go.
Well, Katie, it's been really nice talking to you. I'm so excited to finally actually like hear your voice. I feel like I know you because I read your blog. But I really hope that I get to bump into you on the competitive dance floor in the near future. What's next in store?
My goal is probably early, either March or April. There's the Vegas Open, I think it's called. It's the beginning of March, and there's a Ballroom Beach Bash in San Diego at the beginning of April. And I'm eyeing one of those as my first competition back. I think that'll that'll give me enough time to feel prepared and also have all my you know, competition funds in order.
Yeah, and you'll be doing nine dance by then.
Yes, that is the plan.
There was a little
which
bit of
silence
there.
Which just means everything costs double.
Right. Well, thanks so much. Thank you so much for spending time with me. I know that you're busy with your blog and your books and your real job. So I appreciate your taking the time to talk to me. And I look forward to the next in the series of the Dance Diaries. Is there one coming?
I have my idea for the next one is probably going to be something more focused on competition. Like you were saying earlier, just, you know, what is the on deck area and where do you stand and what, you know, all those little, you know, bits and pieces about pro-am competition. I thought it would be helpful to have a quick, you know, easy to read guide like the other two are formatted, specifically focusing on that. But I'd like to get back to actually competing before I put the book out on competition.
Yeah.
So, but that's the idea for the next book.
Well, I know that you're on a virtual book tour right now, and tell our listeners a little bit about how they can sort of visit you online in that virtual book tour, and how and what your URL is for your blog, and how they can start reading all the wonderful things you write.
Yeah, the book tour just ended actually, but I do have a post with all of the links to the different author interviews and guest posts that I did on the website, on my website, thegirlwiththetreetattoo.com, and people can go there and, you know, like enter an email address to follow me and receive updates on my blog. And then they can also follow me. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all under The Girl with the Tree Tattoo. I try to, you know, I always try to update my readers through, you know, one or more of those places. And then I also love sharing just inspirational dance videos or, you know, quotes, articles that I find online. And more than just ballroom, I'll share hip-hop videos, I'll share contemporary dance videos, you know, anything that inspires me or touches me, I'll share it on my social media. So yes, please come visit me and say hi. I absolutely love hearing from people that read the blog or check out the social media pages. That, you know, as much as I, you know, I try to share my personal struggles so that people going through the same thing don't feel alone, but I love hearing from readers because it kind of reassures me that I'm not alone either.
Yeah, exactly. And for all the gentlemen out there looking for partners, Facebook message.
Yes,
the please. Girl with the tree tattoo.
Facebook me.
That is a wrap. Thank you so much, Katie. I look forward to meeting you on the dance floor sometime soon. Take care.
I hope so. Thank you. You too.